Mrs. Barnes? Silvestri and I have cleared the house, and, finding no one on the premises, have called the widow inside. She's seated next to me on the one-armed chaise lounge in the lavishly appointed parlor near the front door of the home, several rooms away from the scene we've been called here to investigate. My partner stands off to the side, leaning against the priceless Steinway in the corner. We'd only been on the clock for around 15 minutes when the call came in about the incident at the Barnes' home. A spate of car thefts in the tonier sections of Stony Brook and its surrounding towns have accounted for the bulk of the department's cases in recent weeks. Individuals hot-wiring luxury cars and taking them for joyrides before abandoning them in remote locations. Silvestri and I clocked in tonight shortly after one such call came in, and were relieved we'd dodged that bullet. Now, here we sit, on the eve of the 4th of July, kid-gloving a woman whose husband's been murdered under this very roof. "Please," she manages, in a trembling, shock-soaked monotone, "call me Victoria." Her gaze rests somewhere against the far wall, without a fixed point to anchor it. She blinks slowly, heavily, as if having been drugged. Yet, even in her current state, her rangy frame maintains a naturally formal posture, suggesting a woman long accustomed to an easy elegance. She's quite striking, chestnut hair flowing to her shoulders, emerald eyes bright amid the emotional turmoil, barely a thread in her tailored designer ensemble out of place. Her hand involuntarily finds mine, and I feel her palm pushing back against my knuckles, fingers floating, as if trying to stave off the tragedy that's befallen her.
"I'm sorry I panicked," she says. "On the phone earlier, with the operator. The fireworks must have spooked me."
"Completely understandable, given the circumstances," I say steadily. "Victoria, we know you've been through quite an ordeal. Would you be able to run us through the events of the evening as best you can?" She blinks deliberately, still dazed, and turns her eyes to mine.
I was over at our friend Monica's with my sister Laura. We hold our book club there every week while the husbands play poker here."
Her eyes shift in the direction of the den, like a character in a horror film turning their attention to a closet that's just produced an unexpected sound.
"We kind of lost track of time. And then Terry texted to say that they were wrapping up for the night."
I nod, subtly slipping the notepad and pen from my pocket. "And who were the they in this case?"
Let's see. "My husband, Terry Barnes. Spencer Nichols, that's Monica's husband. And then Laura's husband, Gil Mathers, my brother-in-law."
I've got my pen at the ready as she ticks off the names, though I barely need to jot them down. Terry Barnes, the former congressman and very well-connected resident of Kingsland, and probably the lowest of the three on the notoriety scale, who managed to court his own share of controversy in certain sectors by staying in the good graces of the NRA with his staunch support of pro-gun legislation. I flash momentarily to the gruesome scene in the den and flinch at the morbid irony. Next up is Spencer Nichols, the disgraced former CEO of Galapagos Inc., the geo-tracking company that touted the groundbreakingly small scale of the nanotech it developed. Devices tiny enough to fit on the head of a pin, I remembered reading. Nichols was all over the news last year after Galapagos was found guilty of defrauding investors. And last but certainly not least, Gil Mathers, the deliriously successful motivational speaker whose career was undone after video leaked of him at a party surrounded by drugs and underage women, drunkenly belittling the very people who looked to Gil for inspiration to better themselves.